So you've been, how long have you been doing the interview circuit for Love and Mercy? I've been reading a lot of interviews with a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. I just got back. I've been in Eastern Europe working, so I just came in this weekend, and, you know, I'm doing the hustle this week.
Okay.
I mean, I've managed to do a few things over the phone and whatever, you know. But really this week, just, you know, out here in L.A., hustling, and then I'll go back to New York and do a few things there. And it's been pretty good, you know, because I like the film and I like Brian so much. It's a pretty easy one to talk about, so it's actually been... It's been pretty smooth sailing so far.
I saw you. I was in the small press audience in Cannes when you guys came out to talk about the Sorrentino film.
Oh, cool. Oh, okay, yeah.
And I had to suppress an urge to raise my hand and say, "Love and Mercy."
had you already seen it at that point?
I saw it in Toronto.
Oh, you did? Okay, cool. All
I went
right.
nuts for it in Toronto. I did a phoner with Bill, with Polad, and I said,
yeah.
You know, and I was thinking somewhat over-enthusiastically, somewhat irrationally, that they should bring it out right away, and you should be in the Best Actor, you know, derby and all that. But they, you know, they had their own plan, which is fine, you know, so.
Yeah.
But this is the best thing you've ever done, man. This is the best thing you've ever done. Best thing.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, well, you know, it's nice to hear that, first of all, thanks. But also, you know, it's my favorite thing I've ever done, just because it's the most fun I've ever had acting. You know, I think something about Brian's spirit and the music, it was just, there's so much joy in it. I mean, you know, a lot of pain and struggle he went through too, but there was just... so much joy just messing around with the music and sort of just through him. So I'm really happy to hear that.
The detail that you guys adhere to, the way you have, you obviously listen to the Pet Sounds sessions, chapter and verse, and, you know, it's just amazing how exact. And most, you know, I don't have to tell you, most musical, most biopics of famous people, you know, they'll do what they feel they need to do to kind of make their points.
Right.
They don't stick that closely, you know, to what was what actually happened. You guys are rigorous. It's really, really impressive. I mean, just down to everything, the clothes that Brian wore during the sessions. I mean, everything.
It was pretty cool. I mean, first, you know, Orrin and Bill just had like a great take on it because he's such a beautiful and complicated guy to do the whole birth to present day thing, just shortchange who he is, because you'd have to, you know, quickly kind of get through everything, you know, to get your point across. And so just kind of having two specific periods where you can really dig into the human being and to the details, like you're saying, was, I think, just a really smart and interesting way to approach it. And then, you know, we got really lucky, you know, with Bill at the helm, because, you know, the studio stuff we did, we were in the studio. Brian recorded Pet Sounds in. We had, you know, real musicians playing the Wrecking Crew, and including a bunch of his current touring band. Played live. I played and sang live. You know, we had two 16mm cameras going the whole time, and we actually, and because I knew the Pet Sounds sessions and Smile sessions so well, we were able to just kind of, like, go in there and create. You know, I could stop and start them and tell them what to do, and, you know, we had all these beautiful references, and but because the music was actually happening, it felt like things were, like, really alive in there. And that week, or week and a half, we spent in that studio, that's probably my favorite, you know, experience I've ever had. It was just, you know, there was a lot of friendly ghosts and spirits in this studio, and things just felt really alive.
I loved, Paul, the opening bit. That's what woke me up, and I knew it was going to be exceptional. There's, for those who haven't seen the film, and hopefully will go to see the film this weekend, it just starts out with you kind of talking to yourself, Brian talking to himself at the piano. He might be talking to somebody else, but you don't see who they are. But it's so vulnerable, such a confessional moment, very honest. You know, a little anxiety about creation and you know, how the spirits kind of visit you, and what if they stop visiting me? And it's just beautiful, man. It's astonishing, that opening.
Yeah, that's good. That's really nice.
How strictly was that scripted, that particular scene? Or is that a little improv? Or
It is both. You know, the thing that you're talking about what if I lose it and never get it back, that was something that Oren had written, or I don't know if Brian had actually said it, but... Hmm. And then, you know, again, Bill, whenever we were in the studio, kind of just let the camera roll, and, you know, I just sort of sat there searching for, you know, I think it's interesting. For me, Brian is his music, so he can express himself very clearly in music, but using words there, trying to say what he's hearing, you know, is he's searching. You know, I always felt like Brian was connected to something bigger than himself, you know, sort of searching. I think his music became really, I think Pet Sounds and Smile, there was a spiritual thing happening. So, so a lot of it was about, you know, just trying to connect to whatever that thing was that's bigger and sort of search for it. So I think that scene started scripted, and then I just sort of kept rambling.
Yeah. It's so exquisitely done. I mean, I don't know how many times you tried it, or whether you guys were on a clock and you had to just keep moving. What was it like? Could you do things over if you didn't like her, or did you have to just keep doing it, keep moving?
I think both. I mean, it was definitely a tight shoot. You know, it was not a long shoot, and we had a lot to do, and you know, a lot of moving parts in terms of doing the music live on set, and you know, fitting everybody into that small room. Right. You know, which is the room he actually recorded in, and really did cram everybody in there. But I feel like, I don't know, Bill did a good job of letting us play when we could, and we still were able to make our days. So I can't remember if we did that a lot, but I remember seeing the film for the first time, and that Bill had put that scene to open the film, and I thought it was just a brilliant choice. You know,
and I love the way he lets film kind of flame out with a little red to kind of, you know, like an exposure. Which indicates that when you were captured saying that, it was not done under professional circumstances. It was very intimate. It just happened, and that's what happened to the film. It's a brilliant touch.
That's exactly right. I'm glad that's very astute.
Yeah. There's a. I was asked by a friend of ours at Roadside, you know, what's the thing with the best actor thing? I mean, do you feel it's Dano? Do you feel it's Cusack? And I said, man, I can't. This is painful, man. I can't. You know, it's and the best I could come up with. Although I was knocked out, frankly, more by your performance than I was by John's, which is not in the least bit to dismiss. Or marginalized you. I thought that you were both fantastic, but I was knocked out by you. And I said, it's like the two of you are form the whole. You know, it's like I can't say one is, you know, is more striking than the other. I don't know. I felt more sympathy for you because you have two villains in your section. You have Mike Love and your father, and he has Landy, which is a much more ferocious villain in a sense. But Landy, in a way, is Murray. He is his dad, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that's certainly one of the things that connects the two storylines. And look, I think what you're saying is actually a good thing for the film because, you know, I think it has to feel like two halves, you know, adding up to a whole, and it's the juxtaposition between the two that, you know, I think, you know, gives us another layer of who Brian is, or the mystery of sort of what happened to him, and just sort of how unique and complicated he is. So you know, so I think it's good, and I'm glad people you know, feel good about both our Brians.
When Robert De Niro put on Wait for Raging Bull, he famously did a pasta tour in Italy. Did you do a Ben and Jerry's tour in Manhattan, or how did you do it?
Yeah, what I did is, you know, I knew, I think I calculated with the nutritionist that I had to eat, I think it was 4,500 calories a day, because I have quite a fast metabolism.
I love that. You talked to a nutritionist about a safe, healthy way to put on 30 pounds.
Yeah. So what I did was every day I would eat and just keep track of the calories, and hopefully by, you know, midnight going to bed, I would have hit 4,500. If not, I would have to quickly pound a pint of coconut ice cream bed. But one of the helpful things for me was, you know, just shakes, like coconut ice cream, bananas, almond butter, avocado, like just throw a bunch of, you know, healthy, and like, you know, you can't get, I mean, I didn't want to, you know, I tried to do it in a semi-healthy way.
Right.
That's not to say that I didn't have an extra beer just to hit some calories or, you know, whatever.
And how hard was it to get rid of it?
Putting it on was really hard. I would actually say that getting rid of it was easier than putting it on. Putting it on was, you know, I mean, I'm really, you know, I eat well as it is, and I'm naturally, you know, skinny. So it was like a big chore. You know, it was a lot of sweating, a lot of being bloated, and you know, just like, I mean, it felt like shit for a while. And then you kind of get there, and all of a sudden you feel really good, and it helps you lose self-consciousness and really step into the spirit of somebody else. So, but yeah, getting it off, you know, the first bit came off pretty easy. The last bit, you know, the last bit took some work, you know, in the gut area.
You know, I read, by the way, Paul, that there was going to be, at least the original, there was at one time, a concept of having, instead of two time periods, mid-60s and mid-80s, there was going to be a third time period of the kind of lying in bed years, the bearded kind of, you know, drug taking lying in bed years. Is that true?
Yeah, I think early on that yes, there was a what we would have called I was Brian past, John was Brian future, and there would have been a Brian present, which was this guy in bed. Who was quite heavy, and that was that was early on, and I think it was a quite experimental idea, but it led to some fruitful stuff for Oren and Bill. But I think that was just one step along the way to finding what the film was. When we filmed it, that was not the case.
I talked to Brian and Melinda. Linda, in Sundance in '95, I guess it was, from the year I Just Wasn't Made for These Times.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And I had heard him sort of, I lived near a guy where he was playing piano once, way back in the 70s, and it was one of the most brilliant. It was choppy, but it wasn't complete, but he was fooling around with a riff. It was kind of a Barrel House boogie thing, and I just loved it. I just said, who is this guy? And I went downstairs under the pretense of needing to borrow a cup of sugar or something, and there he was, you know.
And
he was an absolute horror in terms of health. You could just see his skin was this color of Elmer's glue all on. He was he sensed my disappointment at him. I didn't mean to convey anything, but he's like a dog. He's very sensitive to vibrations, and he got that I didn't like the way he looked, and he kind of, his whole face fell, and he went, "Oh no, this guy doesn't like me."
Wow! My goodness.
Anyway, I mentioned this to him, way in '95, and he didn't want to hear about it. He was upset by the. He said, "I can't talk about this," you know. And that's just the kind of guy he is. He's very, very delicate in his inside. He's just one of the most unusual people I've ever known.
Yeah, no, I know. He's, his honesty is really sort of disarming, right, and shocking because, I really think he feels and thinks exactly. I mean, he says exactly what he's thinking and feeling, and he, most of us learn to sort of
social skills and
like filter our feelings and thoughts, right? And right. Social skills and sort of and I have to say to play somebody that open, you know, and that sort of raw, it was you know, it was an interesting place to live in. You know, it was incredibly, incredibly vulnerable and scary. But, you know, it makes the highs higher and the lows lower.
Yeah. Did he tell you at any point, I know he came by a couple of times and you guys were shooting, did he ever suggest something you shouldn't do? I mean, I'm sure he was open to whatever, but did he ever say, don't do this or turn this down a little bit or anything like that?
No, he didn't. I mean, you know, I feel like I had I worked on the part for a long time before we filmed, and right. I feel like I was able to kind of, show up to work, really, really ready to go. And Brian was super supportive. You know, the most interesting thing about, you know, what he'd have to say about things is how he feels two ways about so many things, meaning, you know, his father is responsible for the Beach Boys in some way, so he can't not, you know, be thankful or love it. You know, or he's part of where he got it is because of his father, but he also has, you know, really, you know, hard feelings towards his father because he was, you know, so he has these double, same with Mike Love, same with Landy, you know, and it's that space in between that I think is, you know, sort of a hard place for him to live, you know, because you're kind of pushed and pulled, you know, both ways. It's like a seesaw.
Did you do some actual
piano? So that was interesting.
Did you do some actual piano? It looked like you were actually playing there. Do you have a...
Oh, yeah. No, I learned to play for the film. I mean, I played and sang live on set, and that's what they used. We didn't do any overdubs.
So when you're singing for your father, God only knows, that's you.
That's me playing and singing, you know, just
that's
live
good.
There. And same with Surf's Up.
Oh, I completely love that. I really love that. I love the way you play it, and it sounds like it's not there, but you're getting there. You're finding it. Pulling together.
Yeah.
So perfect.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Yeah. And then a lot of stuff in the studio is me singing, too. People don't seem to realize it, but, you know, I worked for a long time sort of on my singing, so often what happens in the studio is it's my voice, and then sometimes they build the song and transition to the real thing,
right.
But sometimes once you double my voice,
right.
Like the way Brian, he often doubled his vocals, it actually does sound, you know, it ended up sounding, you know, pretty close. So I feel like sometimes people don't know that I'm singing in the film.
Well, I know you have to go, but the last thing is that I know that people that are in the music industry who are sophisticated in their taste about music, they all get and appreciate that he's a pretty primally wonderful musician and a great songwriter. But I wonder, I don't know, my son is a pretty hip guy. He knows Brian Wilson pretty well. But I wonder how many people, say, you know, 30, 35 and under, have that much interest, or maybe find... There's a bit of a, you know, kind of a simple quality. I wouldn't say schmaltzy, but it doesn't sound that complex to people that are used to music. What's your sense of what people, you know, closer to your age and, you know, 35 and under, what is your sense of the awareness of him? You've obviously talked to a lot of people about it.
That's a good question. You know, it's hard. It's a little hard for me to answer just because I sort of, you know, grew up playing music a little bit and, you know, so, I feel like there's certainly awareness among musicians, like you're saying, you know, including, you know, people my age. I think if you play, you know, you sort of have a better window into it. I mean, that's what my favorite response that the film has gotten is a lot of people have been like, I went home and listened to Pet Sounds after, and like, I didn't even realize it was so, you know, this or that. And, and I think, you know, seeing those songs sort of get built and the instrumentation, and because the miracle of Brian's art is that it does go down so smooth in your ear, you don't even know that so much is happening. I mean, so much that has not been done before or since. Like, it is completely singular. I think Pet Sounds and Smile are two of the greatest albums ever made. And, you know, I think that you know, the film, I think going back to the albums after seeing the film, I think it's possible you could get something new out of those albums. So, I hope that, you know, I got such a gift from spending time with this music, you know, as a person. So I hope that people my age and younger, you know, are and they will. You know, Pet Sounds is not going anywhere.
Yeah. I think that's a good way of looking at the film, on top of its merits as a magnificent, extremely affecting drama about conflict and vulnerability and pain. But it's also it's a wake up. It does wake you up to the music. I mean, I bought some sounds after seeing it.
Nice!
And it's beautiful. It's really beautiful.
Yeah. Well, those, like you were saying, those Pet Sound sessions and the Smile sessions they released, like a 6-disc thing, it's really a great documentation of an artist at work. I think it's really fascinating stuff. Yeah, you know, so.
Okay. Well, excellent work, by the way, in Youth. I loved your Hitler getup, and I think that you obviously had a good time, and I think it's an excellent film. What are you doing next? Yeah. Is there something on the horizon that you're looking at, or...?
Yeah, I'm just finishing filming. I just done a 6-hour thing of War and Peace, the Tolstoy novel, that for the BBC and the Weinstein Company. So that's a, you know, mini series or a limited, whatever you call it these days. A limited series.
What part are you playing?
Pierre Bezukhov.
Is that the part that Henry Fonda played in the King Vidor film?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful part, it's beautiful material and world. But we've just done a 5-month shoot in Russia, Latvia, and Lithuania, so I'm very happy to be.
Wow.
I'm very happy to be home right now.
All right, lovely talking to you, man. It's great to talk to a fellow Wiltonian every now and then.
I know.
And again, this is the performance of your life so far, and it's. Has to be acknowledged as one of those. I mean, there's nothing that's come close to what you guys have done, you and John together, this so far. I mean, I know that this is not award season and a lot of good films are coming along in the fall, but so far, man, that is it, what you guys have done.
Well, that is really, 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 it's really nice to hear. I appreciate it. And yeah, I'm excited about it. And I hope people see it. I really, you know, care about Brian so much. So thank you. That means a lot.
All right, pal. We'll talk again soon.
All right, dude. I'll see you down the line.
All right,
bye-bye.